tuned in to Naturopathic Earth Radio with certified health consultant and former obese child, A. Gregory Luna, where you get the latest on clean living, natural remedies, effective weight loss tips, and sound naturopathic principles from experts and biohackers from around the world and Gregory himself. Don't be a slave to Big Pharma. Break free of the shackles of Big Food and start your journey now to a long, vibrant, purposeful life. Become a citizen of Naturopathic Earth.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Naturopathic Earth Radio. This is your host, A. Gregory Luna. You can call me Gregory, of course. Thank you for returning to NP Radio. We appreciate it very, very much. As always, you can find my articles and essential oil recipes and food recipes at naturopathicearth.com, naturopathicearth.com. Over there, you can also listen to the podcasts in the event that you cannot listen to them on SoundCloud or Stitcher or iTunes. You can listen to them there live. So we are continuing on the road to the road of toxins, right? We're on this big toxic run now. And I really wanted to mention fluoride because fluoride's near and dear to my heart. I think some of you know that I'm very steeped in conspiracy theories. I think I mentioned it in my MPE episode one when I did it with Kate McCall and we talked about our road to naturopathy. And one of the things I learned back in the late 90s when everything was shortwave radio was the fluoride conspiracy. And I really didn't know anything about it. You know, I'm just like, you know, typical, like most people, right? We're kind of ignorant on it. And I remember hearing about the whole fluoride conspiracy back then. And it's insidious. And so I thought it'd be great to bring it up because we do bring up the more common toxins we've talked about, aspartame and food dyes and parabens and phthalates and stuff like that, monosodium glutamate and the nitrates and all these things. But fluoride's one of those things that you really don't hear about. And even I should say with dentists, I would say 9 out of 10 dentists don't know anything about fluoride or any of the problems with fluoride. And then you do find those dentists, typically they're holistic dentists who stay away from it because they know the issue with it. So what we're going to do is we're going to probably divide this into a two-part series because I'm endeavoring to keep the MP radio shorter. That is some feedback that I've gotten. I know my confessions of an obese child tend to be a little longer, but I'm just trying to make a concerted effort to make these a little more curt and a little more succinct. So we're probably going to make this a two-part episode, and what I'm going to start with is just the history of fluoride in America. And then the next one we'll talk about is some of the effects that fluoride has on the body. All right, so that's how we're probably going to do it. So, fluoride, right? I don't think most of us think about it. Just like when I ask my students, I am a medical teacher as well as a health consultant. If any of you want to lose weight, contact me. But I ask my students all the time, it's like, why do we drink milk, right? And they're like, they give the sheeple response, right? It's good for your bones. You know, why do we need meat? Because it's got iron and protein. So, what is the question of why do we need fluoride, right? Why do we need fluoride? What's up with fluoride? And most people are kind of ignorant about fluoride and don't know why it's even in the water. Some people don't even know it's in the water, to be honest. But I think most people maybe have heard of it. Of course, they know it's in toothpaste. And they just make the perfunctory sheeple answer of, because it's good for our teeth. Well, is it? And even if it is it really good for our body? Is it really good for our body? So there was a time in this, and I'm going to go over the complete history of, but about 30, 40 years ago is really when the debates hit the major cities on whether or not we should fluoridate our water. Now, in most cities, the pro-fluoride your water group won out. In fact, about 70% of U.S. public water is fluoridated. It's fluoridated. And the proponents of fluoridation, their main argument was that studies show that fluoride applied to your enamel of your teeth actually strengthened your enamel. And it would make them stronger, right? And we don't want tooth decay, right? So let's do it for the children. You know, we had such bad teeth. prior to this, but a lot of studies are showing that actually cavemen had better teeth than we did. Well, what's up with that? Like that old SNL commercial, ooh-wee, what's up with that? What's up with that? What's up with that? How did cavemen have better teeth than we did? Well, arguably because they weren't eating, well, we know they weren't eating added sugar, right? The sugar they were eating was coming naturally, so maybe that didn't rot out their teeth. But we're looking at rough fossil records, you know, records of Cro-Magnon men or whatnot that got frozen in Siberia, and we're able to look at their teeth. But the argument is that you add a small amount to the water, it'll strain the teeth. And they, you know, they argue that we use about one parts per million of added fluoride to the water, and that's not a significant amount to cause adverse effect to our health. Well, we're going to cover this. Okay, so what I think some people know is that fluoride is a known heavy metal neurotoxin, and that it wreaks havoc on multiple organ systems. Multiple. And then the other thing is that one of the arguments against fluoridating our water, and we're really going to talk more about it on the next podcast about what it does to each organ system, but newsflash here, it makes you stupid and docile. But one of the arguments that were against it was unethical to treat the water with fluoride without informed consent from the populace, and that dosages cannot be measured since individuals ingest water at a different rate. So water, or fluoride, I should say, there is a pharmaceutical-grade fluoride. Now, the fluoride that we use in our water is not a pharmaceutical-grade fluoride at all. In fact, it's a toxic sludge byproduct. And so the main issue with fluoridated water, one of them, is that you can't control the dosage. So first of all, there is pharmaceutical-grade fluoride. But it's not like we're all getting 50 cc's of fluoride. If you drink a lot of tap water, you're going to be getting more than somebody who doesn't drink a lot of tap water. Let's say Barney from The Simpsons, who's just drinking beer. But arguably beer's got water too. But my point is that you can't control the dosage. So even though the argument is that one parts per million of added fluoride to the water isn't going to cause that much damage, well, not everybody's getting that amount. Some people are getting more than that. And newsflash, we all get fluoride when we inhale it in showers, just like I talked about in chlorine. So that's one of the issues, is that you can't control the dosage. And secondly, it's unethical to treat the water with fluoride without informed consent. It's just like any other time you go to the hospital, you have to give them informed consent before they can do something. They're just dosing our water with poison without informed consent. Just because the city council or the mayor or whatnot approves it does not mean you, the individual, is giving informed consent. So that's one of the issues. So as I mentioned, about 70% of the U.S.'s public water is fluoridated, but what we might not know is that Japan and in Europe, water, fluoridated water, is outlawed. It is banned. They do not fluoridate their water. I believe the only country that does it in Europe is Ireland. But the majority of European countries, even the small ones like Slovakia and Slovenia, and Liechtenstein and San Marino, they don't fluoridate their water. Why? Because they know the long history of documentation showing that fluoride, either naturally occurring or industrial grade, is detrimental to the body. Now, sometimes fluoride is in the soil, and we can get it from different vegetables that we eat. I mentioned once the tea plants, Camellia sinensis plant, does absorb a lot of fluoride. So you can get fluoride naturally from there and from other sources. So most of the world, the Western world, the civilized world, with the white man's burden to civilize the rest of the world, they're like, hell no, we're not going to put fluoride in our water. But America and Canada and a couple other countries are like, yeah, it's a savior to tooth decay. So let's do it. So let's cover the history of fluoride so we can drink the veritable fluoride Kool-Aid and figure out how it got in our water. All right, so essentially it was this. There's a couple of different ways. We know the Industrial Revolution was occurring, started really in England in the late 18th century, but really in America, it really kickstarted in the mid-19th to late 19th century. So we were at one time, millennials, actually manufacturing goods in this country. We weren't just a service sector economy. We actually had factories that made steel and, I don't know, toys and stuff like that. Well, one of the largest industries we had in America was making aluminum. And I think you guys probably know the most well-known aluminum makers are DuPont. A lot of money in the DuPont family. They have that really beautiful house over, I want to say it's the Breakers. Might be a DuPont house. No, I think the DuPont house is that really pretty one in North Carolina. Either way, it's a moneyed family, one of those old school money families. And then Alcoa, which is an aluminum company of America. So they were the two biggest aluminum producers back about 100 years ago. Well, so what they would do is they were making aluminum. And one of the byproducts of aluminum was this sludgy crap called hydrofluorosilicic acid. And it was a byproduct of the smelting of aluminum. You also get it from making fertilizer. It's an offspring of phosphate fertilizer. So what they did, these companies back in the day before we had any type of kind of oversight and we had Greenpeace and the natural, let's not despoil our environment organizations. They would just dump it in the water. They didn't give a damn. Right back then, we were just dumping everything in the water. But lo and behold, livestock was dying and crops were getting poisoned out. So they couldn't do that anymore because the local farmers and livestock people were like, you know, you can't do this anymore. You're killing it. And so they were getting bad publicity. So what they did was Alcoa and DuPont, they partnered up with a couple of people. And one of them was Carnegie Mellon University, which is over in Pennsylvania. Carnegie, again, two extremely moneyed families. You see this connection if you go into like the bloodlines and the New World Order and the ruling elite families. But Carnegie, Andrew Carnegie, and Mellons. The Mellons are a really well-known family. They had a lot of touch or influence in the Federal Reserve back in the creation of the Federal Reserve over in 1913. So they're another big moneyed family. But they partnered with Carnegie Mellon, these aluminum companies, and with the ADA, the American Dental Association. And what they did was they created and funded this mass propaganda campaign to convince the American population that fluoride was good for their teeth and should be put in the water. Now, of course, they had an agenda. This hydrofluorosilicic acid was toxic crap. And in addition to the hydrofluorosilicic acid, there were other byproducts that were coming out of this smelting of aluminum, which included silicon, arsenic, and mercury, and all that was kind of sludged into this hydrofluorosilicic acid. So when we talk about fluoride, and look at your toothpaste, for example, most of the time it's not going to say sodium fluoride, which tends to be the pharmaceutical grade one, but it's going to say hydrofluorosilicic acid. So this is the nasty stuff, the nasty stuff. So we have the ADA, always looking for more business and nice bribes. We're looking at Carnegie Mellon, and we're looking at Alcoa and DuPont. So what they did was they enlisted the help of Edward Bernays. And if any of you know anything about Edward Bernays, if you've ever taken a sociology class, he's the nephew of Sigmund Freud, the famous psychoanalyst. And he's known in America as the father of modern propaganda. He is a god in the advertising public relations circles. He is studied and revered. And he was involved in the creation of this mass propaganda campaign to make people think that this hydrofluorosilicic acid was good for your teeth. And so the ads started kicking out, the ADA, the dentists were coming out, because again, dental schools largely bought off by big business interests, just like big pharma pays for medical schools nowadays. So all the dentists were coming out, they're saying, fluoride's great, no, we need it, it's going to strengthen the enamel. And so what you find out later on is that a lot of those studies were hocus pocus BS. Because later on, Carnegie Mellon was found doctoring studies for other companies. And then you found out later on that they were just bought out and bribed. See, and you see this a lot with big pharma. You know, when a drug needs to be approved by the FDA, typically big pharmaceutical companies will go to certain scientists and say, you know, we'll give you a lot of money if you do this study and tell us whether or not X and X drug is good for you. Well, those scientists, let's say they're good, altruistic, conscientious kind of people with scruples, they're going to do the study, but it's in their best interest to make sure that the study that they're doing for this big pharma company, the drug that they're trying to get approved, doesn't have any side effects. So lots of times they'll skirt it, they'll obfuscate it, the study, to make it come off stronger than it really is. So that's what happened here. So there are a couple of studies that they did in the 50s. So the big campaign was kind of in the 30s and the 50s. And in the 1950s, there were two large studies that came out. And one was called the Newburgh-Kingston study. And what they did was, Newburgh and Kingston are two cities in off the Hudson River in New York. And in Newburgh, they fluoridated the water. And in the neighboring city, Kingston, similar population, similar socioeconomic, you know, similar towns. And in Kingston, they did not fluoridate the water. And what they found out after a 10-year longitudinal study was that children from the fluoridated city, so Newburgh, had lower IQ and cognition, lower hemoglobin count and red blood count, which is not good, right? As well as poorer vision, fragile bones, and that's skeletal fluorosis, which we'll talk about the next episode, and infertility. There was another study that came out where they did the two same things in Michigan City. So Grand Rapids was the town that they fluoridated in Michigan, and Muskegon was the one they did it, and they found similar results. And coincidentally, in both studies, the cavity rates fell equally in both towns, the fluoride and the non-fluoridated towns. And showing that the complete inefficacy of fluoride as a stalwart fighter against cavities. Because in the fluoridated towns and in the non-fluoridated towns, the cavity was dropping. And I'm going to mention this later on. Okay, so both of these studies were largely suppressed and only declassified a few decades ago. And I actually have a link on the article that I wrote about this where you can actually read the actual Newburgh-Kingston study back from the 50s about how it showed about all these things like lower IQ and so forth. So that study was done and it was suppressed because, again, think about who's funding, right? Quo bono, who benefits? Who was funding these studies? Well, the ADA, Carnegie Mellon, Alcoa, they needed these studies to look legit, like fluoride wasn't a problem, because Alcoa and DuPont needed a place to dump this crap, this sludge, and Carnegie Mellon was paying for it. Another study that came out was back in the 1990s, and there was a doctor, Dr. William Marcus, who was senior science advisor of the EPA's Office of Water. Didn't even know we had an Office of Water. And he came out, and he was a whistleblower, and he said that the test results all show that fluoride in any form was carcinogenic and highly pernicious to the body or detrimental, bad for the body. And he stated that the studies were covered up by higher officials in the EPA. Marcus demanded that fluoride be removed from all city water supplies. But not surprisingly, similar to the whole Edward Hooker vaccine and the African population controversy that came out last year, he was fired. Marcus was fired by the EPA, and the mainstream media machine at the time discredited him to make it sound like he was a quack. If you don't know what I'm talking about with the Hooker study, you need to look into that, because there was a big whistleblowing on autism and the MMR vaccine actually causing autism, and especially in African-American kids. And there was a doctor who came out last year who whistleblew on it. And he was interviewed by one other man. And then since then, he hasn't talked at all. I think it's Tompkins was the guy who interviewed him. But Hooker, I'm pretty sure, is the name of the actual CDC scientist. Or it could be reversed. But I would definitely look into that. Because, that's a separate podcast to talk about vaccinations. But they discredited Marcus. And this kind of reminds me of Linus Pauling. And we'll have a podcast about vitamin C. But Linus Pauling is the only American to have won the Nobel Prize twice in different disciplines. And he had groundbreaking studies about 50 to 70 years ago showing that high vitamin C, intravenous high dose vitamin C, was a panacea for heart disease, was a panacea for cancer. And he released all these studies for the common cold. It was an antioxidant and all these things. And the American Medical Association just called him a quack and blackballed him because, I mean, the skeptic would say, again, profit is to be made from disease. And theoretically, if we lived in this utopian world where no disease existed, think of all the people that would lose their jobs. Think of all the industries that would go away. So, I mean, there needs to be a certain level of illness in the world. So these are just a couple of cases of official cases in which fluoride was found to be toxic to the body, but it was covered up and whistleblowers were fired. The other great conspiracy theory was that Stalin and his gulags and Hitler and his concentration camps was fluoridating the water to keep the people docile. And this is something we're going to talk about in the next episode. is that that's one of the effects that fluoride has, is that it kind of, it's almost like weed, but maybe worse than weed. It just kind of makes you lose all your motivation and all your interest. And so, the belief was that he was putting in the fluoride because it would dumb you down and it also just make you less interested in fighting back and essentially turn you into sheeple. Now, I've seen that study. I haven't seen this study, but I've heard about that for 20 years. And I really don't want to substantiate it because I honestly don't know if it's true or not. I mean, if you Google it, I'm sure you'll find people saying it's nonsense and others are saying it's legitimate. But I just want to throw it out there, but I really don't want to give it an opinion at all. But that's just another thing to talk about. All right, so we're going to take a little break right now with a little commercial. If any of you guys are interested in essential oil blend, if you're having anxiety or you need a little energy or you might have some infection on your body, why don't you contact Kate? Kate's Apothecary is a little homegrown business that Kate has out of her office, Kate McCall, who's my partner. And she is a certified aromatherapist and herbalist, and she will help you out. So please contact her through our website. And she can make you an essential oil blend for a very reasonable price and ship it to you to help you out. So again, just look up Kate's Apothecary, contact Kate on her website, and of course, check out her podcast, Kate's Apothecary. She just released her podcast episode on peppermint, the coolness of peppermint. So check out her podcast and contact her, and she can make you an essential oil blend. And we are back. So we've talked a little about the history of fluoride. So the question is, let's fast forward to today. The World Health Organization, the WHO, has been honest. They disclose that teeth decay rates are falling throughout the entire world. Okay, the entire world. And I already mentioned that the majority of the world does not fluoridate its water. The rate of tooth decay of the nations that do fluoridate their water, so that's going to be U.S., Australia, New Zealand, Ireland, is falling no faster than that of the non-fluoridated world. Okay, so let me repeat. Tooth decay rates are falling equally throughout the world. And they're falling in the same rate in countries that do fluoridate and countries that don't fluoridate. So that begs the question, why the hell are we still fluoridating our water supply? It makes no sense at all. It makes no sense at all. And not much has changed vis-a-vis the public debate on water fluoridation in America. I think the proponents for it are either earnest, useful idiots parroting the ADA and big business finance studies, or deceitful scientists knowing full well the effect that fluoride has on the body. Again, these are just like dentists who were taught that at medical school and don't know any better. I remember once I took my students to a medical fair over here in San Antonio, and you were like 30 minutes in each area of medicine, and we were with a dentist group. It was mostly dental hygienists, and I asked them the question about water fluoridation. I was like, why are we fluoridating if it lowers your IQ? And they just were like, what? Because again, I can't blame them because they're not teaching them that at dental hygienist school. But again, so they're useful idiots, as to use the old Lenin statement, but there are people that know about the dangers of fluoride. And I know this is kind of an incomplete podcast because I'm going to talk about all the harmful effects of it in the next episode, but why would you intentionally allow something to be put in our bodies that's toxic to our health? And the answer to that question is the crux of this website, Naturopathic Earth. I mean, why are they putting everything in our food and in our air if they know it's bad for us? Do they know it's bad for us? I think some people don't know, but do the companies that make these things, or do the higher-ups in the CDC and all these places know? Absolutely. And I'm not being a cynic. Perhaps I am being a cynic, but absolutely they know. They know. So why are we fluoridating? two decay rates are dropping everywhere. We should get fluoride out of the water. We got to get it out of the water. It's extremely toxic. It causes infertility. It causes IQ points to drop and whatnot. Now, there is a silver lining. Fluoride toxicity awareness is spreading. So, like, and as I mentioned, here in San Antonio, I think it was back in the 90s where they had the fluoridated water fight. And of course, the pro-fluoridated side is always well-funded. It's funded by lobbyist groups, and they always win out, right? Because if you go up there and you mention all these cities, they just think you're, you know, conspiracy theorists wearing tinfoil hats, right? But there are cities that are throwing it back. There's a couple of small American towns. Jonesboro, Tennessee is one of them, and they've recently demanded that their water be defluoridated. Even more impressive, 25% of Canadian cities have removed fluoride from their water since 2008. So over in Canada, and I was recently there a couple of weeks ago, their food is much cleaner. So I'm not surprised that they're bucking the system, and we're pushing this trend away of fluoridating that we've had over like the last 60 or 70 years. So a couple of quick facts that I want to end with before we end the podcast, or I want to go over before we end the podcast. Then and now, the FDA has never approved a study showing that fluoride in any form should be ingested. The FDA has never approved a study showing that fluoride in any form should be ingested. So, again, so Alcoa, DuPont, all these big business companies, the ADA, they're like, yeah, we should put this in the water because it strengthens your enamel, da-da-da-da-da. But the FDA's never said, hey, this is fine, this is legal, it's not going to help, it's not going to hurt you, and it should be ingested. Because even if you believe in the argument that maybe fluoride strengthens the enamel, it's pretty conclusive if you look at skeletal fluorosis and some of the things we're talking about in the next podcast, that it's not good for you to ingest. So why are we putting in the water? No one's drinking water and spitting it out. That's the whole purpose of water, right? It's the liquid of life. We need it. Another fact, cities with fluoridated water actually have higher cavity rates than cities that don't. So, cities with fluoridated water have higher cavity rates. Okay. As I mentioned, it's impossible to control the dose given to each person. Athletes, for example, are exposed to more fluoride since they ingest more water. People who live in warmer climates like myself are probably going to drink more water, especially in the summer, than those in northern climates. So again, you cannot control the dose. Another one, it's unethical to administer a dose of any chemical agent or drug without informed consent from the public. I mean, you can get sued for this if you go to a hospital and you take out both kidneys when you're only supposed to take out one kidney, or you do a total knee replacement on both knees instead of one. You need informed consent, but they're doing it here. They're giving us fluoride, which is known to affect the body without consent. Another thing, most children in America reach their daily dose of recommended fluoride just by toothpaste exposure alone. Because look, kids, and we're going to talk about where you get your fluoride from and things and ways to reduce it in the next podcast. But a lot of kids swallow their toothpaste. And I know some Americans, and I do this, I buy fluoridated or non-fluoridated toothpaste, I should say, non-fluoridated, not just for my kids, but for myself. I typically get Tom's of Maine, but I just essentially get anyone that's on sale that's non-fluoridated. And but a lot of people give their kids regular Colgate or any of those because, again, they don't know any better. And so the kids are brushing their teeth and they're swallowing it because there's a lot in there. And again, if you want any other argument that fluoride is bad, just look at the back of a toothpaste, right? A toothpaste bottle. It says, if you swallow this, call poison control. Well, if fluoride is not dangerous for the body, why would we need to be calling poison control? Another thing, it's illegal to dump fluoride into a river. As I talked about earlier, the EPA later in said that you can't put hydrofluoric acid into the river like they were doing 100 years ago. So it's illegal to dump fluoride into the river, but it's completely legal to put it directly into our bodies, right? So it's okay to put it in the water and in the cereal and everything that uses water to make it, all the processed foods, but you can't dump it in the water, but you can go ahead and drink it. 40% of American teenagers show signs of fluoride overdosing called dental fluorosis. So again, 40% of American teenagers are showing that they're getting too much fluoride. And you have 50 independent studies showing that fluoride lowers IQ points. And we'll talk about this in the next podcast. A lot of these have come from Asia. China, in particular, has a lot of studies coming out that it lowers IQ points. And see, China probably has a vested interest in lowering the IQ points of their people because it's a communist nation. They want them dumbed down and docile. So these are just some things I want to mention about. So I would say the tide is turning to a certain extent again with education. Like I look on Facebook, I'm friends with a lot of people on Facebook, and a lot of them tend to be holistic alternative treatments, the kind of people, you know, naturopath people, and they kind of are all in the know. So, but more needs to be done to educate people, because most people just don't know these things. But we need to have an honest discussion and not just believe what big business and big pharma tells us. But we need to have an honest discussion about public health, about water fluoridation, mandatory vaccines, phthalates, and whatnot. If any of you are interested in learning more about the fluoride history, I would recommend Christopher Bryson's book, The Fluoride Deception. This was a great book. It's pretty definitive. It's kind of like the go-to book, and it's not written by some tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist. Bryson's a legit journalist. And you can find his Fluoride Deception on Amazon. If you go to my website on fluoride, I have a link to it. And I would definitely check it out. Also, I have a link to the Fluoride Action Network, which is the nationwide kind of opponent to fluoridated water website. And they have a lot of good independent studies linked there. And I would definitely check that out. So those are some of the things I wanted to talk about fluoride. Okay, so the history of it is not good. All right. It is a toxic sludge, and big business needed to do something with this toxic sludge. They couldn't put in landfills. They couldn't dump it in the river. So they're like, hey, let's just come up with this great propaganda campaign, headlined or spirited by Bernays, who's the father of modern propaganda, to put it in the water. And again, like Goebbels, Joseph Goebbels, who was the propaganda minister for Hitler, he has that famous line that says, if you tell a lie more and more, if you tell a lie enough, people will think it's true. And it's the same thing here. You tell people enough that fluoride's good for you, and if the dentist, you know, people that you respect tell you this, you're just going to be, okay, because they're smarter than me, and you never question it. So, I mean, don't feel bad about it. When I was young, I thought these things too. But we need to realize that it's all a scam. It's a sham. It's a deceitful, duplicitous ruse, and we need to bring greater awareness to it. So before I say goodbye, I do want to mention that Kate and I don't make any money off this podcast and website. So one of the ways we can make some ancillary money is if you go to our articles and click on any of the Amazon links. If you do that, and any purchases you make within 24 hours, we get 4% commission. So it would be great, guys, because we make not a zilch from this, and we're both poor teachers. So if you can do that a favor for us, if you're planning to go to Amazon to buy whatever, it doesn't have to be anything that the link is connected to. You could go buy flat screen TVs or whatever. We get a small commission, so we would appreciate that. So I appreciate you listening to this podcast. Tune in soon, and I do have some good news. We're actually going to have some live interviews coming up, so that's going to be exciting. Until next time, guys, take care. Bye-bye.
Naturopathic Earth Radio. Visit us at www.naturopathicearth.com, follow us on Twitter at Naturopath Earth, and subscribe to us on iTunes. Don't forget to leave a review. And remember our core belief at naturopathicearth.com. Let food be thy medicine, let nature be thy healer. See you next time. Music courtesy of Art of Escapism.